The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Shavua Tov, and welcome back. We've missed you. How are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. Thanks to Rolene for standing in for me. It's nice to talk to you again. I hope you guys have been doing well. And a fascinating story coming from the White House. I don't know when last we heard of a U.S. president going down on bended knee in honor of a visitor to the White House.
I was talking about that earlier.
That's exactly what happened.
Isn't it a bit weird, Anthony? I don't know. I was talking about it earlier. I found it a bit odd. No?
it is a little strange. I mean, let's put things into context. Rivka Ravitz, who is the assistant to President Ruby Rivlin, worked for him in his bureau. She's the head of his bureau, and she has worked for him for the last 20 years or more. She is a mother to 12 children, an ultra-Orthodox lady who has somehow managed to hold down a very senior job supporting President Rivlin through his presidency and even in the time before he was president, while also being able to look after a household of 12 children and a husband, which is not an insignificant achievement. And apparently this was not lost on President Joe Biden, who went on bended knee to show his respect and admiration.
Look, it's wonderful.
For her.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it's actually maybe a little weird, but I think it's a lovely story because I think that mothers are not necessarily always given the credit that they deserve, the amount of time and effort that it takes to support the household and also to hold down a very, very senior job in the process. I think credit to Rivka Ravitz and credit to President Joe Biden for giving her the recognition.
Incredible. And this whole story, even mentioning it, you know, sometimes it wouldn't even be mentioned in a meeting, you know,
that it wouldn't, usually it wouldn't, because she's really not the main subject of the meeting. The meeting was supposed to be between the two presidents, President Rivlin and President Biden, but somehow her story managed to get caught up in the during the visit, and apparently President Biden was more than impressed by the way that she manages to run things. Obviously does a fantastic job of supporting the president. Otherwise, she wouldn't have been there during the time of his presidency, heading the bureau, the president's bureau. So all credit
Incredible.
To her.
Lovely story.
Yeah. Well, it is a great story.
Let's just talk about something less lovely, and that is that the government is weighing up a number of additional restrictions following the steady rise in the number of new COVID-19 cases over the last couple of weeks. So what is the situation and what is being discussed?
Well, you know, a few weeks ago we were at a situation where the Israeli economy was entirely open. Mask wearing was no longer required. The number of new corona cases being identified each day was minimal, perhaps a few single cases here and there, really nothing to speak about. We then went into the process of vaccinating our 12 to 15 year olds. The uptake initially was quite slow. There seemed to be no real incentive for this age group to get vaccinated. But unfortunately, very quickly, the Delta variant has made itself very significantly felt, and it has had two effects, the first of which is that it's really affected that age group that has not been vaccinated. It's become so obvious within the healthcare systems, within the education system, and within that age group, so many of those people who are unvaccinated have been infected by the Delta variant, and they in turn have brought it home from trips abroad, and also from being infected up by other people locally, and they in turn have passed it on to others. And it's also made itself felt within the community of people who have been vaccinated. The latest statistics show that the Pfizer vaccines that we have here in Israel are something between 85 to 88% effective against the Delta variant, which is quite significantly less of an effectiveness than it has been against other variants. So we find that even people who have been vaccinated with two Pfizer vaccines and have already gone through their period of allowing the vaccine to take its effect can still be infected by the Delta variant. It is true that their illness, their symptoms are much, much less than somebody who has not been vaccinated. The number of people who are seriously ill in Israel at the moment is around 35 people, so not a very significant number, but certainly an uptick. You know, a week or so ago, there were 23, now there are 35, something like 16 people who are being ventilated. So the numbers are not concerning. The hospitals are certainly coping with the situation, but there is a real worry that this could become more of a thing if it's allowed to. And that's the reason that the Corona Cabinet will be meeting tomorrow, and there could be some more restrictions implemented. They're talking about returning back to the green card situation, where only people who have been vaccinated or who have a recent PCR negative test will be allowed to attend certain places or to do certain things, go to gyms, go to public places. Other people will be prevented from doing so. This has led to a significantly greater uptake in the number of vaccines that the younger age group are taking now. Larger numbers are turning up to be vaccinated. This also is due to the fact that they would like to go away on summer holidays abroad for those who are able to travel, and they're being prevented from traveling if they don't have their vaccine in place. So more people are being vaccinated now. We're back to wearing masks indoors again. So that little restriction has been returned, and there is talk about potentially returning other restrictions if things don't go in the right direction. And the, you know, the numbers continue to rise. There will certainly be greater restrictions. So, the Delta variant has certainly had an effect, and I guess we should expect similar little upticks in other locations where things have been opened up. Most notably, the US, for example, seems to be reopening its economy. New York City in particular is very much open. London in the UK, they're talking about so-called Freedom Day sometime in the next 2 or 3 weeks. And I just wonder whether there might not be again. I mean, we've already seen something of an uptick in their cases even before they've got to their Freedom Day. But, you know, one wonders whether this might affect things moving forward. And the other little interesting piece on the issue of talking about corona issues is the small matter of 1,400,000 vaccine doses that Israel has in its possession and which are due to expire at the end of July. Before I took my break, we spoke about the fact that Israel had wanted to donate these vaccines to the Palestinian Authority and they were rejected. It turns out that there was a little snippet of information which wasn't made public at the time and which I certainly didn't know about, which I'm going to make known now, which is that apparently Israel was not simply going to donate them as an act of benevolence, but they were going to give them to the Palestinian Authority against a return by the Palestinian Authority of other Pfizer vaccines that they were due to receive later in the year. So the idea was that Israel would effectively just accelerate the delivery of their vaccines, give them vaccines now rather than force them to wait until the delivery of their vaccine is due later on. Of course, those vaccines that come later on have an expiry date much later as well. So they would have been forced effectively to use all of those vaccines within the next month before they expire. I understand that Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has been in personal discussion with Pfizer's CEO, Albert Bourla, about these vaccines, about how Israel might be able to get them used elsewhere. The idea being that Israel will have these vaccines replaced by whoever they give them to by receiving vaccines later on. It's almost like a deposit against a future shipment of vaccine later on that Israel will get them in return. Israel, in the meantime, is, of course, trying to encourage children in their 12 to 15 age group to be vaccinated so that they can use up as many of those 1.4 million vaccines as possible. But there's no way that Israel will use them up before the end of July. So together with Pfizer, they're trying to somehow redirect those vaccines elsewhere, either to get some back in return or potentially even just to give them away rather than to have to bin them. So that's the latest on the whole vaccine exchange program, which at the moment, as far as I can tell, doesn't really seem to be going anywhere. There was talk about doing an exchange with the UK that I understand has now fallen through. So I'm not quite sure what the next plan is.
And we'll certainly follow that story and see what does happen at the end. The issue of the reunification law is now testing the strength of the Israeli governing coalition. What is this issue with this law?
So the reunification law was a law that was brought into existence back in the days of the Second Intifada, when it became obvious that quite a number of Palestinian Authority citizens were marrying Israeli citizens, and by virtue of that marriage, they became entitled to Israeli citizenship automatically through the citizenship law that exists in Israel. And then it also became apparent that many of the children of those marriages who were entitled to Israeli citizenship and indeed took up on Israeli citizenship then undertook terror activities against the State of Israel. So the government decided to implement what they called the reunification law. It was an amendment to the citizenship law, which effectively prevented the Palestinian Authority citizens who married Israelis from getting Israeli citizenship. This issue was tested in the High Court of Justice, and the High Court decided that this law was not okay, this amendment was not okay, and forced the government into a situation where they would have to renew the law every single year. So they wouldn't be able to just pass a law that came into existence indefinitely, but this law needed to be renewed every single year. And the renewal for this time around is tomorrow night. This is where we stand, that we're on the verge of effectively that particular law expiring, and the government is very furiously trying again to get enough support to renew the law for another year to abide by the decision by the High Court that was taken at that time. Now, within the governing coalition, there are those people who support it, and there are definitely those people who do not. And it seems as if though there will be no three-line whip on this particular matter, that the Prime Minister and the ruling coalition have said people can vote effectively according to their conscience, or maybe they haven't said it, but people have just simply said that they will not support the law. For example, the Ra'am party that forms part of the coalition has already said they will not support the law, and as a result of that, the government has no majority to pass the law. So, of course, the government is looking elsewhere, potentially to the Likud, to ask them to help to support this law through the Knesset. The Likud, up until now, has always been a real supporter of the law, up until now, as it's been renewed every year. But because of the current circumstances and being the official opposition, they are weighing up their considerations as to whether they would support the law or not. They do support the law. What they don't support is the current coalition. And so they are potentially using this law as a way of testing the coalition and potentially even a vote of confidence in the new government. So it's going to be interesting to see how things work out, because even though the Likud and potentially other parties within the Knesset do support the law if it had been proposed by somebody else, just because it's now being proposed by the new government, by the Naftali Bennett government, Yair Lapid government, they are trying to see what they can do to potentially test the government to not support the law. So I'm not sure where that's going to go. The government said they will present the law to the Knesset anyway. It'll be interesting to see whether some of those members of the Likud might not choose to support the law in spite of the fact that the party is trying some other tactic in order to test the government.
Which is very concerning that you, I mean, it's not unusual, but it's very concerning that a law that somebody believes in will not be passed, or they won't vote for it simply on the basis of party line.
It's called playing politics.
It is. Maybe I just, maybe I'm naive and I just always hope that people go into politics for all the good reasons and not the wrong reasons. And this really just doesn't look good.
I think that used to once upon a time be the case, Howard, but I think those days are long gone. I think that people go into politics now not necessarily to serve the general public, but first of all to serve themselves and their own interests. And it's a very unfortunate situation, not unique to Israel.
No, of course
but
not.
It just seems to be a general trend around the world these days where people who decide to go into public service, as it once used to be called, and is still called, although one wonders whether it really is public
ironically
service.
It's called that. Indeed.
Yeah.
Well, Anthony Wright, the good news is that you are back. It's wonderful to have you. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at the same time.